Hello and welcome to the monthly alumni webinars for all session clients. It is the third Monday of the month, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day at 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time. My name is Brittany Lefko. I am the trainer for all of our Lefko Method training courses. I'm a certified Lefko Method facilitator, and I am here for the month of March to let you know a little bit about sessions and what the goal is, what beliefs are for any of you guys that are not quite understanding anything about particular beliefs. You know, what's the difference between a belief and a pattern or, you know, something going on in your life. So I'm here to answer any questions that you guys have. The more you participate, the way better this session will be. I guess this isn't technically an alumni one because it's just for session clients, but we have alumni webinars for some of the other things. And I always tell everyone, the more you participate, the better. I can't read your minds. I don't know the kinds of questions you have and the kind of things that you want to hear about. So I always prepare stuff to talk about so that I can try to provide as much value as possible, but the best stuff really comes from me interacting with everybody here. So if you have questions, please feel free to raise your hand. You just click on the hand raising button. Questions, comments, really anything that comes up. Otherwise, I'll, you know, just be talking and you don't want that. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. First, I want to see if anybody has questions, if anybody wants to raise your hand, anything you've been thinking about over the course of the last month. I don't know if you all attended last month. For those of you who are in other time zones, I know that you're listening in to a recording, so we really appreciate you being here. So yeah, does anybody have any questions? If you don't have a camera, or not a camera, I'm sorry, if you don't have a microphone, please feel free to type your questions in. They'll come directly to me and I'll be able to see them and answer. All right, let's get started with Rick. Hi, Rick. How are you today?
Can you hear me?
I can.
It's actually Dee Dee and Rick.
Great. Hi, Dee Dee.
Hey, so I've worked with your mom, and one of the things that she's really shared with me is that about living your life without making judgments about things. So I don't know how to say it clearly. So if events have no meaning, then how do you walk through life without events having meaning? And one thing that she said that your dad Morty is very happy and enthusiastic. And so I'm wondering, how in the world do you do that and not put meaning on things?
It's a fantastic question. So thank you so much for asking that. So I have two different answers. The first one is that there's a difference between things mattering to you by choice and things having meaning. So if you look at a negative example, right? So let's say that your husband, you know, always leaves groceries out and doesn't put them away, and you say this means he's inconsiderate and rude and he doesn't care about me, you're going to feel crappy, right? When you realize events have no meaning, the fact that he left the vegetables out on the counter means nothing about him or me or our relationship. It doesn't mean he doesn't love me. The feeling goes away. But with something positive, like let's say your relationship is going really well, and things have no meaning. So just because it doesn't have meaning that your husband loves you or that your children are successful and doing well, it doesn't have meaning, that doesn't mean that it doesn't matter to you. So again, choosing to care about something based off of feelings of love or compassion that you generate on a day-to-day basis, you know, relationships that you create with people, living from passion. So this is actually a conversation I had with my dad just the other day, is he said, you know, what I want is for this process to be in the hands of every person on the planet. He said, I want everyone to have access to this work, and I want everyone to be able to feel free and happy. He said, I am so passionate about what I do. I love my job. I love waking up in the morning. I love the testimonials that we receive all the time. He said, and if something happened and I couldn't get it into the world in a bigger way than I have, he said, it doesn't mean anything, right? So for him, he lives with passion, you know, working towards the goal of getting this work into everybody's hands. But if it doesn't mean he failed. It doesn't mean he didn't change anyone's life. It doesn't mean it was a waste of time. It doesn't mean anything, right? Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah. So, My dad and I are extremely, extremely close. He's like, the most amazing man on the face of the planet. So I'm very close with him. And he tells me all the time how much I matter to him. But again, it doesn't mean anything if I'm vocal as well. We're both obviously very self-expressive. We talk with our hands loud, kind of loving people. So we're both very expressive about our love for one another and how, how grateful I am for his support and for, his knowledge and his wisdom. But he knows that if I never said anything again, it doesn't mean I don't love him, and he chooses to appreciate the things that I do, but it doesn't mean anything if I don't. So he always says, "I love you because I said so," right? That's, it doesn't mean anything what you do or don't do. Does that kind of answer your question?
It answers it. I think to put it in practice is a little more difficult
Yeah.
because there's a fine line between not giving something meaning. I'm sure that you remember, where detachment was a really big thing years ago, in psychotherapy, detaching. So you had a lot of people walking around like a bunch of selfish zombies. You know what I mean? Well, it's not my problem. I don't get that. That's the same sense of what you mean. But I do think it takes some real contemplation and some practice to put that into place.
I strongly, strongly agree with that. Yeah, because without practice, when you have intense emotions, what ends up happening is if you're not able to really dissolve the meaning, you end up shoving down the feeling, like you said, and being detached in a shut down way rather than dealing with the actual, with the actual no meaning piece, realizing it has no meaning so that the emotion falls away naturally. So yeah, it takes a lot of practice in order to get to where my dad is. He set an alarm every hour, every day for, I mean, months, to really get it down. I mean, and he teaches the LEFCO Freedom Course. Do you know about the LEFCO Freedom Course?
I do.
Okay, have you taken it?
I have not.
So in the LEFCO Freedom Course, you literally learn how to dissolve occurrings. You practice, you interact with other students in the class. My dad provides, extensive feedback every week. You set alarms together. So it's a whole course. I mean, it's not the kind of thing where you just get, oh, events have no meaning and then you move on, right? Like you said, I mean, there's a whole, I think, 6, 8 week course dedicated to, learning to master the skill. And at the end of, I think it might be 8 weeks. Could be six, but at the end of the course, you have the skill mastered, and then you're able to do it automatically. But it definitely takes a lot of practice, just like you said. Yeah.
Yeah,
Great.
definitely.
Good.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you so
welcome.
much.
Thanks so much for participating, Dee Dee. And then I see Greg has his hand raised. Let me go ahead and unmute you. Hi, Greg. How you doing?
Hi, Brittany. I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks. What can I do for you?
I've got some questions about the belief process and conditioning, and I've done quite a few sessions on a particular area of like fear and anger. And every now and then, something will come up and trigger something in me that will cause me to get upset. And I'll have a session on it, and I'm fine for months. And then something will come up, and an incident will happen, and I'll get upset again. And I'm kind of wondering, maybe there was some trauma in my early life where I'm perhaps conditioned to feel fear under certain circumstances, or from that trauma, I developed a belief that I'm going to be attacked in certain circumstances. And so this incident could be triggering maybe both conditioning and a belief. And I'm thinking that maybe it hasn't cleared up because when I do a session on it, I'm only really. I have no idea where the source of it is, so it's hard to like remember the when it first happened. But I'm thinking that maybe I'm just clearing the occurring of it and not clearing the source of it.
Yeah, that's a really an interesting distinction, because realizing that any event in the moment has no meaning, you dissolve the feelings for that particular moment. But again, that doesn't mean that it won't come up in the future. So it sounds like you said there's either some kind of a belief there or some kind of a conditioning that comes from, an early traumatic event or early traumatic events. And yeah, when you're looking at a pattern, most likely you know, the majority of the beliefs come from pretty typical, you know, childhood experiences, and that's where all of those beliefs come from. But when you're having an experience, like you said, where there's really, really unique circumstances that bring up a feeling or emotion only sometimes, or if there were, you know, traumatic events or experiences, absolutely getting rid of those kinds of beliefs would be really important. And like you said, most likely it's probably not very many. So then what I would do is I would have a session focusing specifically on, you know, the consistency that once every few months, you know, X, Y, or Z happens. What could be going on that's causing me to feel fear, to get upset, or to, you know, have this particular reaction, and to find your pattern. Again, a pattern is any behavior or emotion that's unwanted. So behavioral patterns can include avoidance, like procrastination, compulsive behavior, like emotional eating. They can be things like depression, so emotional patterns, mood patterns, triggered emotional patterns. So again, things like I feel fear or upset or guilty when, you know, someone is upset with me or something like that. So these kinds of patterns, these emotions and these behaviors that we live out, when you can define your pattern as I'm fine. And then all of a sudden, you know, these particular things happen and I react, and then your facilitator can figure out what those beliefs and conditionings might be. So yeah, it seems like you're right on track.
What if you can't get to a source of it though, the first time it happened or something like that, you know?
There's two different options. The first one is you use logic. So basically this is how my dad has eliminated all of his beliefs. He has no childhood memories. So he looks at what was my family life like when I was a teenager, and what was it likely like given that when I was a kid. So if my mom was emotionally absent when I was 16, she probably was emotionally absent when I was six, right? People don't really change that much, right? Or if my dad was really critical when I was in high school and I, you know, got a bad report card, he probably was critical when I left my toys out or spilled juice all over the floor, right? So one way to do it is to look backwards. So to look at events that you do remember and see how, you know, things likely were earlier in life. Or if you know that there was some kind of a trauma, but you don't remember it, again, you use logic. Given that event, what would I have had to have concluded? And can you see that if that happened, you know, that would be a logical belief to form. Do both of those make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying you don't actually have to remember the specific instant where you first formed that belief or that conditioning.
Exactly. Yeah. So having the actual memory isn't important at all. All that matters is you know that that makes sense and it feels real. So as long as it doesn't feel like you're just making it up, you say, well, yeah, I really remember, you know, being 18 and having my parents be really critical, or, well, I know I had that experience and I know that if I had that experience, I must have felt that way, right? So, yeah, you really can use just pure logic and whatever memories you do have, if you have any, to figure out the source and move forward that way. Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know if this is included in your belief system, but I have a belief system that says I have lived other lives, and that there may have been incidences in those lives that have affected me that as a soul I haven't completely processed.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like I died a terrible death in some other life and now I'm still occasionally affected by the trauma of that when something comes up that's similar to that.
Right. I would say... not speaking for the Lefkoe Institute, just speaking for myself as somebody who I had a client once before who had a strong feeling that he had had past lives. Actually, I've had two. I worked with another client who had that feeling as well. And that's not something that an experience that I can relate to. But we did work on, you know, what kind of felt like these memories or ideas of prenatal kind of senses and stuff. And we were able to do that. So, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Lefkoe Institute or again, on behalf of my own beliefs about how things are. But if you have, again, all that matters is that it feels real. And if you have a sense that you might have concluded something based off of, you know, any experiences, whether they have to do with this lifetime or others, prenatal, you know, childhood, whatever, as long as it's real for you, that's, you know, that's definitely something that you can try out.
Great, great. Thank you, Brittany.
Yeah, you're welcome, Greg. Thank you so much for participating. All right, some interesting topics coming up. Did anybody have any other questions or anything that you wanted to bring up, given some of what we've just talked about? Let me try to call on one person and see. Tara. Tara, can you hear me? No? What about Ya?
Play some tennis, man.
Hello? Ya, can you hear me?
What?
Oh, hi. I just unmuted you. I was just going to see if you had any questions or anything you wanted to speak about.
yeah, you caught me eating dinner here, actually.
Oh, sorry about that. I'll let you.
I do have a question, but if anything, I'll pop in a few minutes and ask you later.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt your dinner. All right. Yeah, but feel free to raise your hand as soon as that question comes up, and I would love to address it. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about a pattern that is really, really common with people who have experience in the world of personal growth and self-help. And something I've been coming across more and more frequently with clients is people that seem to consistently have something wrong or consistently seem to have beliefs. They have a feeling like, I feel like I have a million beliefs, or I feel like I've eliminated all these beliefs, but there's still stuff going on, right? So very frequently I have clients where we do, I almost always suggest a package of 10 sessions, right? When you do 10 sessions, you know, you're going to make a solid dent in whatever it is that's not going on in your life. You're going to have an unwavering positive self-regard, right? So you're going to have that natural sense of self-confidence, and you're going to be able to eliminate at least a pattern or two of behavior or emotion that isn't working in your life. That's going to be pretty profound. You're going to feel like you've moved mountains. And then if you want to go ahead and do more sessions, fantastic. And if you want to stop there and wait a while and start again, whatever works for you. But I like to always do a minimum of 10 sessions to really make sure you're giving yourself an opportunity to get rid of all of the necessary beliefs to again, really see a profound shift in your life. However, you shouldn't have to have 200 sessions, right? And you shouldn't feel like you need to be having a session every time something negative happens. So what I've started noticing more and more are different kinds of patterns about having problems, right? So an example of that, I'm just looking, I took some notes. I'm looking at my little piece of paper. I actually don't even know if my webcam is working. I can see myself. I don't know if you guys can see me. Whoever raises their hand next, I'll ask them if they can see me. So some people have beliefs about happiness, right? You have to, oh, we can see you. Great. Thanks, Juan. Appreciate it. Some of those patterns are beliefs about happiness. You have to be perfect in order to be happy. If things are wrong in my life, I won't be happy, or I can't be happy. So particular beliefs we have about happiness, and those can be formed early in life, either if we see our parents unhappy and we feel like we have to fix everything to be happy, if we see, you know, our parents maybe in therapy or struggling to change and are having a hard time changing, feeling like, ooh, the only way I'm going to be happy is if I deal with all my stuff. Now, again, of course you want to get rid of your negative beliefs. Why would you ever want to live with negative beliefs that you don't have to live with, right? If you're in sales and you get nervous, why would you be nervous if you could be confident, if you could be not nervous, right? If you have a fear of public speaking, why would you live with that? If you procrastinate, why would you live with that? So of course you want to get rid of your patterns, but there's a difference between getting rid of your patterns because you see the benefit in your life and feeling like you have to psychoanalyze yourself all the time and be perfect, which is clearly impossible. Other beliefs that people often have are beliefs about deserving to be happy. So people create suffering in their lives through, you know, their belief systems that make them feel like they always have to be focusing on the negative or always suffering because it can't just be easy because of deserving. Another thing that I've seen is very often for people who are really sensitive emotionally, they have beliefs that the world is a scary place, right? As a kid, when you're really sensitive and you feel like your parents are angry with you, you feel unloved by the people your survival depends upon, the heaviness of those emotions can be really terrifying. So very often people that are really sensitive come out with beliefs like, I can't face the world, right? I'm not strong enough. I'm too weak. The world is scary. The world is dangerous, and I simply can't handle it. So they end up focusing on their problems because they don't want to have to go out into the world, right? And be big and face the world kind of in a vulnerable way. So that's another thing that I think holds a lot of people back. So I just wanted to bring that up a little bit, that it's great to be motivated and it's great to work on yourself. And I've had clients who will come back, you know, will work for, you know, a shorter period of time. They'll see great changes. They'll go live their life. They'll call me. They'll say, something came up. I want to work on it. We'll have a few sessions. We'll work on it. They'll go back to their life. Then they'll call me again a couple months later. Something else came up. And I admire that. And I'm inspired by that. And I love that people, you know, want to be happy and want to experience themselves as the creator of their lives. And as you know, the world is a beautiful, exciting, adventurous place of unlimited possibilities. And again, there's a difference between that and feeling like you have to eliminate every single belief in order to be happy. So that is something I wanted to bring up. It's just been on my mind. And I think it's an important thing to talk about, especially for, you know, people who are having sessions, to make sure, how are you looking at this work? Are you seeing it as something that's really positive and uplifting? Or are you seeing it as something that's kind of negative and brings you down? And if it is something that's negative and brings you down, make sure that you look at the possibility that there might be a pattern there that's making you feel like you have to keep working and working. Did anybody have any questions about what I just said or any comments about their own experience, either with this pattern or knowing somebody that had this pattern? No, no hands? Nobody? All right, Rick. Rick, can you hear me?
Yes, it's Dee Dee again.
Oh,
Rick is here, but Rick tends to sit back and let me ask the questions.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask you a question. What I've been seeing in the world is a lot of suicides going on. And so it does appear that we have this illusion predicated by TV, magazines, celebrity, you know, ism, that there are people who don't have problems, who go skippity-doo-dah through the day, and I think that that's very damaging. And somehow we've got to normalize being average. And so I just wanted to ask you about how you would describe the line between being average and playing big in the world, or being okay with being normal but going for what you want. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's a phenomenal question, Dee Dee. Thank you. So the idea of an unconditional positive self-regard is that you believe who I am is good enough, okay, valuable, just the way I am. Not because I'm famous, not because I'm brilliant, not because I'm beautiful, but because of who I am. Right? So once you have a positive internal self-regard, once you have an unwavering basic sense of confidence that is, again, has nothing to do with you being big in the world, it's a choice. You don't need to succeed. You don't need to achieve. You don't need to have people like you in order to be good enough. You just are. And if you want to sit back and be a couch potato, that's okay. However, if what makes you passionate is, you know, finding a cure for cancer or being a celebrity, again, not because you believe that being famous will make you worth loving, but because you love to act and because you love, you know, being a public persona or, you know, starting a nonprofit and going to other countries where you're giving out medical supplies to, you know, during community initiatives. So there are ways to be big from passion, where again, like I've said about my dad with using the occurring tool, that he wants to get his work out into the world more than anything, more than anything. I've never met anybody as committed in my life to a cause as my dad is, to having his work in the hands of every human on the planet so that they can experience himself as the creator of their lives, so they can be free of suffering. That's all he wants. However, he knows if it happens, great. And if it doesn't, it doesn't mean anything about him. It doesn't mean he failed. It doesn't mean he's not good enough. It doesn't mean he didn't help thousands of people. It doesn't mean that it was not worth the effort, right? So again, he wants to be big in the world because that's where his passion is. But it doesn't mean anything if it's not. And if he's having a day when he's tired, he'll rest, right? So he's not a workaholic. He's not driven to achieve. So does that kind of make sense, that distinction?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is probably one of the most healing messages and attitudes we can have in the world. I would say it's not the dominant message that's in the world. The dominant message is, you know, you have to keep moving forward, that if you're average, you're lazy. If you're normal, you're not pulling your weight in the world. I think that's a huge message that's really corrupting people, hurting people. Sorry, my dogs are very loud when they're drinking.
That's okay.
Yeah, so I just wanted to ask you about that, and then to say, just because I eat my ice cream before dinner doesn't mean a thing, honey.
I would agree that dessert first is a totally legitimate thing to do. And one more thing I wanted to say on that topic, because I think what you brought up is extremely important. One theory that I will offer as to why we rely so much on these external sources of recognition for our feelings of goodness, one of the reasons why our culture is driven the way that it is because just about everyone, I would say out of maybe 50,000 people, 50,000 have the beliefs, I'm not good enough, I'm not important, I'm not worthwhile, maybe 49,997, but it's a high percentage. So we all have these negative self-esteem beliefs, right? Our parents try their best, some are good, some are not. Some try harder than others, but they're going to get upset. They're going to have a long day. We all know what it's like to go to work and come home exhausted. It's, you know, not always ideal to come home with toys all over the floor and dishes in the sink. And, you know, of course, we're going to get frustrated sometimes. So when we are children, we look at our parents, they are critical or frustrated or, you know, busy. And we say, oh my God, I'm not good enough. I'm not important. I'm not worthwhile. Nobody in their right mind wants to walk through life feeling not good enough. So at some point early in life, we will be recognized for something by someone. And whether that's by our parents, by teachers, by peers, by relatives, they're going to say, oh my God, you're so smart. Great job. Or they're going to say, you're going to be so successful when you grow up. Or they're going to say, you're so good at sports. Or everyone likes you. You're so friendly. And how's that going to make you feel? I just went from feeling like crap about myself to feeling good enough. And it happens over and over again. And we say, oh, I get it. What makes me good enough is being popular, being well-liked, taking care of people, achieving things, being successful, being smart. So we develop what we call survival strategy beliefs, beliefs that make us feel okay when we don't. And we spend our whole lives chasing these outcomes, having people like us, having people feel taken care of, being well-liked, right? Being successful, whatever those are. So when we are run by these survival strategy beliefs, your sense of self is always resting on externals. So that's why we have people who say average is not okay, because when I'm average, I'm not utilizing my survival strategy beliefs, my coping skills to feel okay. When I'm average, I'm aware that I have a host of negative self-esteem beliefs that make me feel like crap about myself, right? So it's not until we have external validation that we cover up all of those latent insecurities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I can see, or it is my belief, that we don't need to add more to our life. We need to get rid of these things so that the creativity, innovation, and passion naturally bubbles up and move towards what we're interested in.
Right.
It's almost
as
if all of that has been stacked up on top of our passion, purpose, and personality, and we're trying to live with all that crap on top of us. So
Yeah. And what you brought up is so important, because research has shown that patterns like perfectionism don't actually produce better results, right? So trying to do things perfectly doesn't actually make you be more perfect. What it does is it causes anxiety, it causes feelings of low self-esteem, and it's less productive, right? So people who are perfectionists tend to be less effective and less productive, right? Because you're more worried about doing something perfectly than about, again, giving yourself the space to be innovative and creative and do, you know, the best job that you can without that anxiety. So yeah, things like perfectionism are extremely detrimental, both in our personal and professional lives. And like you said, having that positive internal self-regard gives the space to take risks, to not have the fear of failing, which result in far, far better work being produced and, you know, more successful professionals.
Yeah, I have, my mother's a perfectionist, as is my best friend. Mm-hmm. And so both of them get rewarded with, oh my gosh, your house is so fabulous, the yard is so fabulous.
Yeah.
You know, these things are wonderful and fabulous. The negative side to it is that they cannot be with you when you are there, because the mental body is, oh my gosh, I need to pick up that glass if they just sat down, or I need to fix this, or I can't sit down. So it's a very destructive thing. But again, it's a double-edged sword, because they're getting a lot of rewards from that type of behavior as well.
Right. And until they're actually able to see, until they eliminate those beliefs and realize that their good enoughness or their self-worth is not reliant upon doing things perfectly or upon anything external, right, they're going to continue to feel that way. So yeah, that's a good point you brought up. Well, thank you, Dee Dee, so much
for
your participation. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, it looks like Yah is done with dinner. Hi there.
Hi. So I did have two questions.
Okay.
So the first question I had is, I've been working with your mom on a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And so I have seen some progress in a variety of areas. The one question I was going to ask is, when you get rid of a lot of limiting beliefs that were motivated either good or bad behaviors, what are you, like, for example, if you have all these goals you want to achieve, what is supposed to intrinsically motivate you once you remove some of those limiting beliefs that might have...
Yeah, great question. So what I would say is that we naturally have passion. We naturally want to succeed and achieve things and have a life that is fulfilling, right? It's beliefs, again, like what makes me good enough is doing things perfectly, what makes me good enough is achieving. It's not that those motivate us to want to achieve. That's what motivates us to not want to feel not good about ourselves. So what I find working with clients all the time, right, you know, every day, is when they get rid of those beliefs, they're actually more in tune with their passion. So very often people aren't searching for promotions. They're not searching to do their best work because they're afraid of making a mistake, right? They would rather do kind of standard standard average work, knowing that they're going to succeed, rather than really taking the risk to go the extra mile, to try harder, to work harder, to try something new and be outstanding because, well, what if I fail, right? So what we've found working with clients is, as you get rid of those beliefs, it's not that your motivation goes away, it's that your fear of failure goes away, right? Your beliefs that you need to be achieving. Again, if you're achieving and getting a lot of recognition in your job and you know that there's a promotion that's going to be opening up, you don't know how good of a job you're going to do. What if you're not recognized? If you don't have a positive sense of self, you're going to have a lot of anxiety about taking that job. Whereas if you believe I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, there's a natural learning curve, I want to be successful, but it doesn't make me good enough or not good enough, the likelihood of you going for that promotion is way, way, way higher, right? So what we've found is when people eliminate those beliefs, all you're really doing is eliminating your stress. You're not changing your motivation. If anything, again, you're becoming more motivated because you feel safe wanting things. You're not afraid of being disappointed or of not being well-liked or of failing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. Thank
Great.
You. Yeah. So the other question that I had is, I had a compulsive habit that I was working with your mom.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a lot of emotional issues and a lot of stuff that kind of was intertangled that I wasn't aware of that kind of led to it. And as I've gotten rid of them, the habit is still there and I'm still kind of stuck on it a bit, but a lot of the emotional underpinnings and a lot of the issues and the turmoil that I was dealing with is essentially gone for the most part.
Great.
The bad thing, the only bad thing or the sticking point is that the bad habit in and of itself kind of has this reward in such a way that, you know, you're still kind of gravitating towards it. You're still kind of engaging in the habit.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's not productive, even
yeah,
though you know
absolutely.
It's pointless, you still kind of, there's still kind of a pull to it occasionally here and there. And, you know, before I had all sorts of turmoil over the fact that I indulged in the habit. Now there's less of that, but it's still, you know, I have other things I'd rather do. And as I said, the guilt is not as big, but it's still like I could be doing something else with this time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm just wondering how to deal with those type of things, like a
bad
habit.
Yeah, absolutely. Another great question. So I have two different things that I want to bring up, which is pretty typical. I normally have more than one answer to things. So the first one is, it sounds like because it's a multifaceted issue, it's taking a little bit longer to deal with. So normally, you really focus in on one pattern. I procrastinate. I get angry really easily. I'm afraid to speak in public. I have a hard time marketing myself, right? So when you're dealing with those kinds of patterns, you generally can get rid of it in 3, 5, maybe max 6 sessions. So things go very, very quickly, right? You get rid of patterns very quickly. When you're dealing with things like habits, addictions, guilt, sometimes different kinds of emotions, it really isn't one pattern. Right, it's more than one pattern. So let's say that you're dealing with alcohol abuse. So you might drink because you're covering up your anxiety. You might drink because you believe you don't deserve to have fun, and it's your one way to kind of get that out of your head. You might have social anxiety, and you drink because it makes you feel more comfortable around people. You know, you might believe that life is hard and have a pattern of feeling like the world is a hard place and it's a way to take the edge off. So that's not one pattern, that's four. And then of course you have all of the conditionings and triggers about the reward. So it sounds like part of what you're dealing with is the fact that you're not really working on one pattern, you're really working on more patterns. And so it's just taking longer. And so you're, like you said, you're seeing kind of general progress, but you're not seeing any one pattern really disappear. So maybe if you can look for what kind of, like you said, untangle the particular patterns so you know exactly what the patterns are that you're working on, and then eliminate each pattern one at a time. That way you'll be able to really concretely see, oh, this pattern is totally gone, but this one isn't. So that's my first answer, is to try to detangle the patterns and think about them as separate patterns rather than as one pattern. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great. The other one is, there is a specific process that we use for addictions and habits specifically. And it is a triggered reward process that we use for emotional eating clients and that we use for other addiction clients. So it sounds like you probably haven't used that enough. Or at all. I'm not sure if you've used it at all, but
I think your mom might have walked me through a few of them for some things, but I mean, there might be other triggers. And as you said, if it's all intertangled, there might be other things that I have to deal with.
Exactly. And I would say, I think that's going to be probably the biggest piece for you, because very frequently we look at beliefs as, yeah, sometimes you have similar beliefs, but it's not like you have a, you know, 12 of the same kind of beliefs. Sometimes with rewards and triggers, you can just have, you know, 20 of them. Now it takes, you know, less than 5 minutes to go through the process. So it's not like it's a, you know, a huge time investment, but it sounds like there might be some more rewards there. So what I would do is I would look at rewards, conditionings, and really use the scope of the LEFCO method and in all of the different process that exists besides just the belief process to get rid of all of the facets of the habit as a pattern.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Great.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
No, I think that's it. I'm probably just going to book another session with your mom or something like that.
Great. All right. Thanks so much. Yeah, I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? This has been excellent. I've had some really great participation. And again, the participation is always going to be better than any, you know, kind of theoretical things I could bring up on my own. So appreciate everyone's participation so far. Anything else for the moment? No. Okay. So another thing I want to talk a little bit about is how negative patterns of behavior prevent us from seeing opportunities. So this again is going into the idea of kind of real world application of this work. And it's easy to get lost in theory, in, oh, this is so great, and you feel better. And that's true. But, right, there's also a very practical application that if you are in sales, I'm just going to keep using that as an example because it's on my mind right now. I had a client, you know, right before this who is in sales. So if you're in sales and you have beliefs that prevent you from feeling comfortable with prospective clients, or if you have beliefs like what makes me good enough is knowing all the answers, and you end up coming off as arrogant and untrustworthy, prospective clients are not going to want to buy from you, right? They're not going to want to work with you. So when you eliminate beliefs, it's not that the world magically changes. It's not that the, you know, you start attracting positive things. There are opportunities already there. But if you can't gain relationships of trust with prospective clients, they will not be your clients. If you believe, you know, that life is hard, you're probably not going to be aware of choices that you could make that would make your life easier, because you believe, well, life is going to be hard anyway, might as well make all of these hard choices, right? So yes, our lives do change dramatically, but it's not because of any kind of magic, right? It's very logical, and it's very practical, and it's very tangible and concrete. So I do like to, you know, take a minute to bring it back to that, you know, when you work with people on specific patterns, you get measurable results, not because you're changing who you are and you just feel so empowered that you're, you know, running around as infinite possibilities. Right now, my dad really does come from a place of infinite possibilities. I've never seen anything like it in my life. It's unreal, right? People really just have no power to upset him because he doesn't give anything meaning. And if someone's in a bad mood, it's like, well, it doesn't mean anything, right? So he just gives so much space for people to be who they are. However, most of us are not at that point, including myself, right? I'm not at that point. So for me, it's really important to think tangibly about the patterns that are in my way that are going to prevent me from having the life that I want, whether it's the relationships, the career, you know, whether it's, you know, what's going on professionally with my friends, really anything. So I just wanted to take a minute to bring it back to that and talk about the importance of staying grounded in real life, practical, professional terms in your, you know, personal and professional lives. But did anybody have any questions about that? Let's see. Yeah. Hi there. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I actually had a question. I'm not entirely sure if it's related, but I did have a question. I'm trying to figure out a way to phrase it.
Feel free to butcher it all you want, and we can turn it into a question together. I'm so happy about participation that it doesn't even need to make sense right away.
Okay, I'm just trying to remember what it was. I think it kind of slipped away from me. I did have a quick question. I forgot it. I'll let you know if it comes to
me. Okay, I was going to say, was it maybe about, you know, things being practical, tangible, sales, seeing possibilities that were already there but you didn't see before?
I'm trying to remember. It's not coming to me.
That's
like,
okay.
When
All
the
right.
question disappears, it completely disappears. So
that's okay. All
I'll
right.
let you know when I come
to. Yeah, feel free to raise your hand again. All right. Anybody else? Any other questions? I'm just kind of, oh. It says, interesting, my thing is being weird. Okay. All right, any other questions? Let's see. Tara, I remember I feel like I tried to call on you before and it was made noise. Tara, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. So just over the, you know, the course of the past 45 minutes, have we brought up anything of interest to you? Is there anything that you were thinking about that we haven't brought up?
Well, I took the occurring class, well, uh-huh. when it was, I know now it's called the LEFCO Freedom Technique.
Uh-huh.
And I probably need to do this on my own, but I need to review how to dissolve occurrings.
Uh-huh.
And so I have all my notes and everything, so that's what I need to do. I didn't know if you could review any of that or not.
Absolutely, yeah. My okay. dad, especially with the LEFCO Freedom course, he, uh-huh. it's like his baby. He's so excited about it. So he really just wants everyone to practice and get value out of it. So you absolutely are able to review when there's a new course going on. You just sit in and review in whatever way you want to. That's something you can discuss with him. But he's had a lot of people review that he gets excited, kind of come back and do that. It is the kind of thing that really does take practice. There's a huge difference between understanding logically how it works and practicing, especially when it comes to stronger emotions. As you know, I mean, you set that alarm every hour, right? And really practice. So it sounds like review would be really great, so that you can get to a point where it happens naturally without even thinking about it. It happens automatically.
Yeah, during the class, I did set my alarm, so I might need to just do that again.
Yeah, but practice. I would definitely feel encouraged to review it if you'd like, because that's something that my dad is very open to and excited about.
Okay.
Great.
All right.
Thanks so much, Tara. Appreciate it. All right. It looks like you remembered. Hiya.
Hi, yeah, I finally remember the question.
Great.
Okay, so, before, when I used to have a series of thoughts, the thoughts would affect my emotions and all this stuff, but mm-hmm. over time I've been able to through lots of meditation, I've been able to kind of separate, like, thoughts or the ability for thoughts to affect how I feel for the most part. Mm-hmm. But the only thing is, there will be situations where I'm thinking of something, right? And I'll think about it, and I'll think about it, think about it, think about it. And it's just one of those things where, like, I want to stop thinking about a particular thought or a particular, like, cycle of thoughts related to one topic.
Yeah.
I want to think about something else, but I can't break it. I'll try to think of something else, and I'll come right back to it and start thinking about it a bunch. And sometimes it's productive, but sometimes it's very time-consuming.
Yes. As always, I have two responses. The first one is, I would look at what beliefs are causing that pattern of behavior, which is, like you could, call obsessive thinking or compulsive thinking. And most likely there are beliefs there, like the way to be in control is to think about things, or if, it's dangerous to let things go, or whatever those beliefs are that are specific to you. But I would think about that as a pattern, right? So it doesn't necessarily matter what it is that you're thinking about. It matters that you feel control or power or safe or whatever you feel when you're thinking about things and you have a hard time letting go. So the first thing is, I would work on that pattern in terms of beliefs. The second thing is, in the moment, if you know how to dissolve occurrings, there is likely an occurring there that thinking about it will be helpful. That's an occurring. That's not a fact. That's a meaning, right? Or that it's important to think about it, or I need to think about it now. So I would look at, what meaning are you giving to thinking about this particular topic? So say that it is about work. And you're thinking about work, and you're thinking about work, and you're thinking about work, and you're like, well, it feels kind of productive, but I keep thinking about work. I don't want to think about it anymore. What meaning are you giving to the idea of thinking about work? And again, options could be that it's going to make a difference. That's an occurring. So dissolve the occurring that it's going to make a difference. Realize that it's not necessarily going to make a difference, and that way you'll let it go, right? Or the occurring that it's important that I think about it, or again, that I have to be in control, or if I let it go, something bad's going to happen. So I would look at the beliefs, but I would also look at what occurrings are having you think that thinking about it is productive or a good idea, and then dissolve it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for participating. Great question. Yeah, this has been a really fantastic hour so far. We've had tons of participation, so I'm very appreciative of everyone's participation. Did anybody else have any final questions? We're coming to the end. We have a lot of really great stuff. Again, I don't want to give too much information and overwhelm everybody. So any other questions? Okay, I guess I'll probably, there we go, Juan. Hey, Juan, how you doing? Oh, I can't hear you. Oh, I'm going to remute you and see if you can get your mic to work. I can't hear you. Let's see if you raise your hand again. Oh, you can't. You can't hear me. Can everybody else hear me? You want to type in if you can't? All right. Well, I guess in either case, what I'll say is we are coming to the end of the hour. So I'll just go ahead and stop here. For everybody that's listening in that wasn't able to come, again, due to time differences or scheduling conflicts, thank you so much. We really appreciate you spending your time. For everybody that was here, thank you. And a big thanks to everyone that participated. That was a really phenomenal conversation. A lot of really interesting things were brought up. These webinars, again, are here for you guys to answer any questions and discuss topics of interest. So if you have questions, please feel free to send them in advance. If not, you know, bring them to the table when we're here. If you don't have a mic, you can always type things in and I'll answer them. It is the alumni webinar for all session clients. It is the third Monday of the month, St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day. It is now 7 p.m. So enjoy the rest of your evening. Thank you so much for participating, and I look forward to speaking to you all next month. Bye.